So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to review.
How far is this Little White Chapel? How much time do you think to get there?
About 15.
Okay, perfect. Great. Have you driven many people through it?
Through it?
Yeah. Have people gotten married in your cab?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, it doesn't have a drive-thru.
Oh, it doesn't have the drive-thru?
No.
Which one is the drive-thru?
Well, they have several drive-thrus. You have to find them. You have to find which one you want.
Wait, a Little White Chapel is not the one with the drive-thru?
No, as far as I know, it's not.
Oh, because that's the one we're actually looking for. The one with the drive-thru. Neither of them.
Tell me the one over here.
So neither of them have the drive-thru?
Little White Chapel Tunnel of Love. Is that a different place?
No, that's the same place, Little White Chapel.
Okay, well...
they probably have the Tunnel of Love there.
Yeah, the Tunnel of Love.
Yeah.
But it's not a drive-thru.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right, well, I mean, that...
You know, they're going to have a tunnel where you probably get married in it or something, but it's not a drive-thru. As far as I know, they might have one, and I don't know about it, you know?
All right. All right.
Speed, right? Little White Chapel.
Yeah. Joan Collins, Michael Jordan. Yeah, exactly, the
24-hour drive-up wedding window.
Does it say that?
And is that the address?
Little White Chapel.
That was it.
And is that the same address?
That was it. That's what I measured.
Okay, great. Excellent.
Wedding window.
We have big plans.
Here's the Little White Chapel.
Oh, right, this is... I think this is what we're looking for.
Yeah.
Oh, this is perfect.
Yeah. Right,
beautiful.
Here.
Thank you so much.
Oh, this is perfect.
Over there and let you guys know.
Thank you.
This is exactly what we want.
See, they have a lot of places, little areas to get married in, you know,
so
this is it. We wanted to come here for a long, long time.
Oh, did you?
Yes.
Go into the chapel and we're gonna get married. Go into the chapel and we're gonna get married.
Welcome to Review Away. I'm John Pollock with my travel mate, Wei Ting.
Back here.
Both of us are nursing throat problems.
Yeah, a sore throat.
Sore throat.
Yeah, that's what...
Throat problems. Makes us sound like we have throat cancer or something.
Yeah. I really, you know, people have complained about how...
Sickly we are.
The only things we ever complain about on the show are how... tired we are or how sick we are, and I'm starting to think that there's something to that.
Maybe we're weak.
Yeah, we were.
Maybe our immune systems are immune to happiness.
Yeah, I don't know, but yeah, you and I mean, I thought it was just me.
Maybe we should make a bigger point of when we're rested and healthy, because a show just comes and goes where we're normal.
Oh, you're right. Yeah,
we only talk about when we're away from normal.
Yeah, that's right. So anytime that we actually feel good, we'll make
points. I feel rejuvenated right now.
You do?
I'm also drinking caffeine.
I'm drinking a green tea with honey.
Green tea with honey?
Yeah.
Wow.
Billy B. Honey.
Billy B. Honey.
Yeah.
Only the best.
Good old Canadian. What is this? Billy B. Canada's number one white honey.
White honey.
Purely natural.
Why do they call it white honey? It's not white. It's orange.
I guess there's like a dark honey. Do not feed honey to children under 1 year of age. Did you know that?
No. I would not even think twice about giving honey to a child.
That was that's a warning on this label.
Wow.
Good thing I read that.
We have a lot to discuss today, not the least of which is Stephanie McMahon and her drug-induced wedding that we're going to chat about from November of 1999. But this whole show today, we were delaying it slightly on this Wednesday because we got back from Las Vegas, so we're getting back to normal. But Wei, what do you recall from Las Vegas? It seems like it was only 7 days ago we left for Vegas, but man, so much happening in that span.
Well, let's go back. Let's go back to the first day, and I suppose this, I mean, we'll talk about the show, but I feel like a lot of people are probably interested in our time in Vegas, too.
Yes.
Because we didn't really...
I meant to write down a list of stuff, but we'll remember it.
We didn't really get a chance to do, a show from Vegas because we were simply too tired and because there was also so many other things to do in Vegas.
Yeah.
You know? But I remember going to the airport with all of our gear. We try to head to the airport probably about 3 hours ahead of time, anytime we have an international flight, because we gotta, go through our equipment stuff or our carnet. And usually...
Oh, I just remembered what happened at the airport. Christ, I forgot to even talk about this.
Usually I'm the one, because I all the Fight Network camera equipment and the tripods and the lighting and all that stuff is usually under my name, so I'm usually the one who usually takes longer to go through customs, because I gotta get a bunch of things signed and filled out, and they always usually ask me questions and look through all my stuff. But this time, it was John Pollock who was held up at customs.
Treated like an animal.
I mean, I just pretty much, did my thing, went through.
You were still sent to customs, though. It's not like you were just sent right through.
But it was pretty much as easy as it could have been. They said, oh, you got a carnet? Let's take a look at that. Let me sign that for you. Boom, 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 done.
Which was bullshit, because the only reason I was put aside here at immigration was the fact that I said I am going to Las Vegas to cover the UFC, and they had a problem with us taking equipment. They said, are you going to be recording stuff and bringing it back to Canada? I said, yes, we are going to be covering this event. Well, you're going to have to go to immigration. So I thought, if anything, at worst, you'd be stuck there with me. Like, you had the physical equipment that would be recording this. Nope. We walk in. We are separated. I'm told I cannot use any phone, no electronic devices. You just sit here. And Wei comes in, stamp out. And then Wei comes over. Well, aren't you coming? No, I've got to wait here till they process me. So I'm hoping this is going to be a quick deal. There's a few people ahead of me. One guy in particular who I think missed his flight because he was delayed so long. Thankfully, we were there long enough. But I'm just sitting there. Wei is texting me as I'm just trying to subtly text back without giving them a real reason to give me problems. 45 minutes of me just sitting there. With each minute wondering, man, is this going to interfere with the flight? I hope that there is enough time to just get through this. And I don't know what's going on here. Like, I've never encountered this show in the States.
You didn't know, but think about me. I was stuck on the other end inside the airport, already past our gates, wondering what the hell was going on. And I just, like, I expected you to just come through. And, I started to text you. And
I was giving like one word answers back because that's all I could type as I was trying to make sure they didn't see me texting.
Let me just
you pulled it up.
Read our conversation, okay? This was on Wednesday evening, probably like less than an hour before our flight.
About that.
Was set to take off. I text John. Still waiting? John. Yes. Me. Did you go up to check with them? John. Yes. Me. I'm starving, so I might look for food first, if you don't mind.
Asshole.
John. Okay, I can't text anymore. Me. No problem. We're at America Bar and Grill. Just walk down the hall after security. And that message was sent at 6:51. At 6:53, John texts, in all caps, holy shit! And I text John, are you through? I'm with our colleague Ariel. Not Ariel Helwani. This is our Ariel. John texts me. I have been given a temporary stay residency that doesn't take effect until tomorrow morning and put on a 9 a.m. flight to L.A. I'm fucking furious right now. And then at this point, I'm panicking myself because we had the... media day, first thing in the morning, the next day in Las Vegas. And if John, I thought John meant Las Vegas and only typed LA, but no, he meant Los Angeles. If he was going to fly to Los Angeles the morning after, then we were fucked. We were screwed. We didn't have anything to, we didn't have a host. So I text John, can you talk on the phone? John says, yeah, call me if you want. I'm on my way to get a cab. And it was at this point where we called John, and John just on the phone, he's just like almost crying about how frustrated he is. And I'm just trying to calm him down. Hey, you know what? Don't worry about it. We got Ariel here. Well, we're going to do our best to try to fix this, but this is ridiculous. I hand the phone off to Ariel, who talks to John, and Ariel himself is just like, yeah, John.
His first words were, I know what you're going through. I had to deal with this once.
I've been through this. Oh, okay. Yeah, that's hilarious. Okay, all right. And then I'm just still frustrated, and I don't know what to do. Then in walks the biggest fucking grin on this fucking asshole, who just taps me on the shoulder as I'm sitting here. You know, this asshole John Pollock, who's just been setting me up this whole time with this terrible, terrible joke.
And the people at the next table who got to hear this whole phone conversation in panic, my God, did they think this was awesome.
You're a terrible person.
Listen, I had to have some comic relief after that 45-minute wait. What happened was, I got up in front of the guy, this dude with like two sleeves, and his name was Brumbaugh. And he's just typing away, won't even make eye contact with me. And he's like, what are you doing in Las Vegas? I said, I'm covering the UFC event. For what? A television station in Canada. What is the channel called? The Fight Network. Will this be airing in the US? And I said, no. And then he keeps typing away. I'm like, what is going to go wrong here? And he says, I only really care if John Jones is fighting. And at that moment, I was in the clear. I'm like, I'm good. I'm solid. And he just keeps typing away, and then he starts asking me, well, have you ever interviewed John Jones? I'm like, I have interviewed John Jones. Pulls out his phone and shows me a photo of him with John Jones.
Wow.
And then he starts talking to me his thoughts on women's fights. He just can't get into women's fights. He's like, I just can't watch them hit each other. Unless they were, you know, in bikinis and mud. I was like, well, I don't know. I don't know if they'll be going that direction anytime soon. And we just started talking about all the upcoming fights. I'm looking at my watch. I'm like, I can delay my wait here if this guy wants to talk about fights. Stamps me and lets me go. I was like, what was the point of this? What were these 45 minutes designed for?
Really wanted to wait to talk to you. He was that excited about his John Jones conversation.
Well, he was a big, big fan. So, I mean, sometimes that really helps when you run into someone within your age bracket who's covered up in tattoos, there's a reasonable shot.
Brumbaugh.
So big shout out to Brumbaugh at the Pearson Airport.
Well, thank you for letting my friend through. Only if it would have been nice if you would have let him through a little earlier. But
no, that's what you were there for. Stamp, camera, no problem. We'll see ya.
That was odd.
I had no equipment on me. There was no, I don't know. I have no idea. You know, I did make the mistake, though, of on the way there. They always say, what is your purpose for traveling? And I always tick off personal, which it really isn't. It's business.
Yeah.
But I just out of the custom, just always tick off personal. Yeah. I don't know if that. We also had a dick who was, like, checking with us. And as soon as we said that we were doing anything with work, he sends me and Way off to another lineup that we have to wait for, and then they send us to immigration, and this guy was just the person ahead of me, first of all. As we were waiting in line, this guy yells at Way for using his cell phone. Mm-hmm. Turn your cell phone off! No cell phone use!
Yeah.
And then, as I'm waiting, the guy ahead of me in line, all I hear from this customs guy is, assault? What kind of assault? Simple assault? All right, you can go through. That's who got through, but you and I get flagged. You fucking kidding me?
Yeah, well, it's probably simple assault.
Simple assault. Yeah. What does that mean?
Not as bad as possibly taking a video sending it to Canada. I mean, I've had positive and negative experiences with borders and customs. For the most part, I mean, I'm sure they're just instructed to be completely...
Is it a quota thing that they gotta pull apart?
No. But I mean, personality wise, I'm sure they're just instructed to be completely unpleasant, you know, on purpose. It's the border, and it's also the DMV are probably the places where you encounter the least happiest people on the planet. And I had the privilege of doing both that week. But whatever, we made it through.
Yeah, we got. Anger on the way there, stupidity on the way back in regards to how they handled you, which we'll get to.
I don't even remember.
Your name?
Oh, yes.
In the computer?
Yes.
So we got to Vegas late on a Wednesday night, but we gained 3 hours because of the time zone shift. So that was good. I wasn't too tired. We went out for some beers on Thursday night, as I recall. The drawback being we had to be up super early because media day began at about 8 in the morning. Mm-hmm. And we thought we were in the host hotel at the MGM Grand, but as we learned on our trip, Ariel had booked our trip thinking the fights were at the MGM. They were actually at Mandalay Bay.
Yeah. I had been to Vegas probably about 7 years ago, and my first time here, I actually stayed in the Mandalay. And I recall the MGM not being too far. In fact, I remember it being pretty much one of the closest hotels to the Mandalay Bay. So I thought, okay, that's not a big deal. It's just across the street, right?
I have always had the impression they were literally like across the street, but that's more a figure of speech.
Just, even if it was across the street, the streets are wide. The strip is wide.
This is like a big L you had to take to Mandalay Bay, with gear no less.
And forget the distance. It actually was way further than across the street. It was like, yeah, up a block, maybe like up three blocks, and then across the street. But let's say these two hotels were right next to each other. Just the distance between our rooms to the entrances felt like I was walking a half a city, you know? Like, I did not really anticipate walking that much on this trip because I thought we'd just be going from hotel to hotel. But just these hotels are so big. They're so fucking massive that just to walk from my room to the door, and then from the door to the through the casino to the convention center, carrying all this fucking gear. One of my biggest regrets is not bringing my cart because, man, I got so sick of these walks from the entrance to the whatever the media room from the entrance to our rooms themselves. Man, it was just unbearable just to lug all this stuff.
I meant to apologize to you on the day we were leaving because I felt like such an asshole. We were you were packing to get ready, and you needed some more time. So me and Ariel were going to go ahead and check out, not realizing how much shit you had to bring down. You had all your camera gear in addition to your own baggage. So Wei comes down as we're checking out with a tripod in a case, camera bag around his neck. His own luggage and a backpack that it was like a 10-minute walk from the hotel to the checkout area.
Oh, God.
And I was like, fuck, we left this guy to have to drag all this shit down here. I felt really bad.
No need to apologize because I probably should have.
I did not do that on purpose. I didn't realize how much shit you had to bring.
You don't have to apologize at all.
And on top of that, we were wondering where Wei was, and I texted him, "Hey, everything okay?"
Well, I really had to rush. I really underestimated how long it would take me to pack that last day.
Yeah, we made it. It was fine.
We made it.
Yeah. Some of the highlights of the trip. We won't go through everything. The first, I think it was. The second night that we took the trip to the Bellagio, your big sightseeing extravaganza.
My whole thing was, I mean, you know, we had done all this work for the UFC and covering the UFC, and it was time to enjoy Vegas. It was time to enjoy the actual place. So I thought, hey, why not? Let's take a walk. I didn't really want to head back yet. We had dinner with our friends Ariel Helwani and. Esther Lynn and
Chuck Mindenhall was there.
Chuck and Casey Lydon. And then, you know, they wanted to pack in, but like I was like, hey, we're in Vegas. Let's at least take a walk, right? See the strip. And it was so hot in Las Vegas.
If you're not used to that heat, I mean, walking out of that airplane was just, I've never felt heat like
you're
that.
You're in the desert.
Like you were in it's not an exaggeration it was the equivalent of feeling like you were in a actual sauna. Especially, only there's no door to walk out of it.
Yeah, especially considering, you know, like where we're from. And not to say Toronto is it's actually quite warm in Toronto right now, but we're used to maybe temperatures, you know, around body temperature at this point. And to go to Vegas right now where it's I wish I could explain.
It was over 40 Celsius for Celsius. Canadians.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't know what that is.
So we don't need to convert.
But it was just unbearable almost.
And how did this compare to when you were in Abu Dhabi, where it was like you couldn't even go outside there?
Abu Dhabi was way worse. Yeah. And I wish I knew the temperature there. But it was because like Abu Dhabi, when I went like a couple years back to cover a jiu-jitsu thing, it was just like it got to the point where I took a step outside. I took maybe like five steps, and then I was like, fuck this, I'm gonna head back into my hotel. And that's what Ranveen and I ended up doing most of the time, because it was just so hot. Like you felt it in your bones. It was so hot. It was the hottest temperature I'd ever felt in my life. And I suppose if you're there long enough, you eventually just get used to it.
Yeah,
but I certainly wasn't, you know. Vegas was really wasn't that bad, but still, you know, You had to kind of prepare for it. I will say, though, it is a perfect temperature for, like, laying next to the pool. And, you know, like, to be – it was perfect beach temperature, I would say.
On the way to this – to the Bellagio, where Wei wanted to go
– I just wanted to take a look
at a pond.
Hey, the Bellagio is a world-famous fountain.
Yes.
Has a world-famous fountain. There weren't any shows at the time, but I just thought, okay, might as well be a destination we walk to.
Well, we also got to encounter all the vendors on the street who were just, my goodness, they just want to claw at your dollars. And they're selling, but you got to be really creative with your selling features, right down to the basics of, come on, fellas, it's titty time. And Wei had enough of this by one guy basically inquiring if Wei would like a hooker to show up at his hotel room. And Wei just replies with, I'm gay. And the guy, without even batting an eye, just replies with, I've got male review, 12-inch male strap on.
Yeah, wow.
No, he said it was a mechanical penis he had. Male review.
What does that even mean?
I don't know. A mechanical penis.
I was actually kind of tempted. This is a 12-inch mechanical penis.
That could end horribly.
Yeah.
In an emergency room.
I just want to see it, that's all. But yeah.
But you also saw the best t-shirt of the entire trip as well on this little trip we went on.
I'm sure a lot of people like have probably seen these if you've been to Vegas recently, but like there are these guys who, I mean, basically all the vendors you meet in Vegas are advertising for strip clubs or prostitutes. And there's like a whole crew of these guys on every corner wearing shirts that read Orgasm Clinic, and these are like bright neon shirts
people wearing them, that it's almost like they have no clue what they're wearing or advertising. They just look so out of place.
It looked kind of sad because they're
very sad.
These are clearly like, you know, like migrant workers who really they had no other business but to wear these shirts, stand on these corners holding these giant balloons that read like hookers at your door or something. And their shirts were just so funny because it said Orgasm Clinic. First of all, that was already funny enough. Like, to think.
And Wei goes up to someone, wait, what does your shirt say? Pull it up. Because it was, he had like a strap going over top his chest, and the guy pulls it up, no smile on his face, just like embarrassingly showing this to Wei, who's just laughing.
I was naturally curious. But what made me more curious was the fact that these shirts didn't even spell orgasm properly. It's spelled O-R-G-A-S-I-M.
Orgasm.
Orgasm. And these shirts were printed probably in the quantities of up to the thousands. Because every guy was wearing these misprinted shirts saying Orgasm Clinics. I really wanted to take a photo, but, you know, we didn't have a chance.
Yeah, and they blew the orgasm.
Yes.
Shirt. That was a lot of fun. Friday night, it was a lot of fun because we went to the weigh-ins, covered that, and then I made my Wei over to meet up with Todd Martin, our good pal from the Wrestling Observer site, and him and I, we made the mistake of we were going to meet inside of a casino, which proved to be very, very difficult to find one another. About 8 texts back and forth, we found each other, went for some beers, where I ordered a Shock Top, a very well-known beer. And the guy just tells me at the bar, well, do you want my special recipe? And like an idiot, I say, sure, why not? So he brings back Todd's beer, and he gives me mine. He's like, secret ingredient is vodka and orange juice. It's like, all right. I went to go drink this thing. Wei, I swear to God, there was no detection of beer in this thing. I drank a pint of, pretty much a pint screwdriver.
Mm.
And was buzzed by the end of this drink. It's like, you want another beer? I was like, I will have another beer. Not that. And I was good for the rest of the night after those two drinks.
You and Todd?
No, Todd was smart. He paced himself and had normal beers. I had the screwdriver, the power drill, I'd like to call it, and then another beer. And then we made our way to this place called Buca di Beppo, which is where the Figure Four crew is having their big convention dinner. So that was a lot of fun. I got to meet many, many people involved with that website. Dave Meltzer was there. Brian Alvarez was there. Of course, Todd was there. Our man Rodney Rogers, nowhere in sight. Didn't come to Las Vegas. Heard we were coming. Made the alternate plan to just stay home.
Yeah.
Really, really dropped the ball.
Probably once he heard that we were showing up.
Yes.
He was like, I don't want anything to do with those guys.
We had some cameos. So we had the dinner. Dinner was a lot of fun. And then made our way to Ed and San Antonio's suite down at the Riviera, which is where you showed up and met up with us. You had your own plans for dinner and then came to the party afterwards. And that was a fun time, too. Mm-hmm. Antonio Thomas was there. Of the Heartthrobs fame,
right, Heartthrobs.
Who some people came up to him thinking he was Tom Lawler,
yep.
Which was great.
So if you see him, please introduce or say hi to Tom Lawler.
Ask him how his injury is healing and if he still wants to fight Ilya Latifi later maybe this year.
Yeah.
So he was there. Crime Time actually stopped by at the dinner portion before they went off to Khloe Kardashian's birthday party, which got them on TMZ.
That is bizarre to me.
Crime Time?
That they would appear on TMZ for just appearing at Khloe Kardashian's party.
I think
this was a newsworthy item for TMZ. Prime Time, a tag team that hasn't been on WWE TV in many, many years, appearing at some sex tape celebrity's sister's party.
Yeah, it is even the sex tape celebrity. It's her sister. Though people know Khloe Kardashian.
It was also bizarre to me that they would leave the Figure Four Wrestling Observer party to go to that.
I would have, honestly, what would have got more traction? Khloe Kardashian's party with Crime Time or a photo of Crime Time with Dave Meltzer on TMZ?
Why didn't that make TMZ?
Should have been on there. Yeah. I should have taken a photo and sent it into TMZ.
Yeah,
that would have been a great idea. By the way, coming up at a future date on the site, we will have an interview with Crime Time.
Ooh.
A quick one.
Ooh, wow. You managed to catch up with them, Matt?
Yes. Yes. I even found a cameraman to shoot it for me.
Shit.
Yeah.
Wow,
so you'll love it.
Nice.
Surprise.
Cool.
How did you enjoy the party? We got to, because you got to meet a number of these people for the first time, I imagine.
Yeah, I met a lot of people. I mean, I guess I'd met like Brian Alvarez in the past, but we never really had a conversation. But, you know, that was cool to be able to talk to him about jiu-jitsu. I mean, the guy told us he teaches, like, in addition to everything he does at Figure Four, he teaches, like, 19 hours of jiu-jitsu a week, which is just, I have no idea how he fits that into schedule, because I know my coaches don't even teach that much. So it was cool to talk to him about that. Got to meet, of course, Jonathan Snowden.
Yeah, yeah.
From Bleacher Report. Really cool guy. He tells me he's actually writing an article about the party itself.
Yeah, he mentioned that because he was talking to a bunch of us saying, yeah, he was going to write a piece on just the just this kind of culture of people on a message board that meet up for a convention.
I can't wait to read that. I really can't wait. As well as Steve Juwan.
Stevie J.
Is that how you pronounce his last name?
No, but that's
Steve
his
Juwan?
What he goes by. Juwan? I think
Juwan?
You pronounce like Juwan Howard.
Stevie Flash Juwan.
Yeah, tell us, because maybe some people are familiar with, he works for the Angry Marks website and the Wrestling Observer, but he has a past life that it was foreign to me, but I remember you telling me about this years ago.
I believe it's still his current life.
Yeah, he still does it, but not my scene, much more yours.
I had always known, like, I suppose I, you know, I guess I've kind of known of, I've seen this name around in MMA and pro wrestling circles, but I had always been curious if it was the same guy that I had seen in the past on rapreviews.com. And it turns out, yes, the same Stevie J who writes for angrymarks.com is the same Stevie J who has run rapreviews.com for many, many years. Like, I used to go to this website just to, you know, when I was just a hip-hop fan looking at reviews of a bunch of things. This guy has been at it for a long, long time. He also runs the official hip-hop lyrics archive Ola.com.
Ola?
Yeah.
How do you spell that?
O-H-L... Oh, man. O-H-H-L-A, I think. Yes. And
glad I asked. I would have assumed O-L-A.
But that itself is like another, you know, very popular website within the rap circle. So I just thought it was amazing to me that it was the same guy, you know? And I got to meet him. He told
me. We chatted with him about that more than anything and how he's actually had rappers not only get upset with reviews, but one in particular, and I can't even remember who it was, found where he lived and posted a note on his door.
He's a Christian rapper.
A Christian rapper. Apparently not. Threatening to, that thou shalt inflict harm if I get a bad review ever again. Mm-hmm. This is crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy. Well, people who review, like,
maybe we got to watch what we say. Maybe one day, I don't know, Vince Russo or someone's going to make their way to Canada.
Well, that, I mean, you know, I suppose I'm a little bit more, I feel a bit more safer reviewing pro wrestling as opposed to reviewing rap albums, where I feel like the risk might be a little higher. But he's still around.
That's why I keep you around. You're my muscle, boy. Yeah.
I don't know about
that. You can protect us from anybody.
But that was a good time, you know, visit all, like, you know, it's just cool to meet other people that we've kind of only heard about on the internet, in person, you know, and, you know, just a chance to hang out.
Yes. And I want to thank one of the people I met there, Damon, who, first of all, he recently had this shoulder surgery, and he was telling us it was very similar to what Wade Barrett had. And my phone was dying, and he lent me his portable charger for the night.
Wow.
Very nice of him.
Amazing.
Meet so many new friends
at
this particular outing. So that was a lot of fun. And then we went into Saturday, which was the day of the fights, but we went to the Fan Expo first. And this was kind of just a free-for-all. And me and Wei didn't really know what to expect because all the we as media, I've never covered the Fan Expo. I went to the Toronto one just to kind of check it out, stayed for like half an hour and then left.
I actually shot it once with the Conventioneers.
Right, not for Fight Network.
No,
but that was the dark days.
Even with the Conventioneers, like I remember like being told that we had to have a chaperone and that the chaperone would only allow us to shoot for about, it was something like 15 or 20 minutes. And at that point, like Jay, you know, got really upset because the show itself is like at least a 22-minute show. There's no way we can do a whole show in 20-something minutes. So eventually we just like – we had the chaperone and then we just kind of ditched the chaperone and we just shot the show. And it turned out fine.
And here at this expo, like that's what the other media members had told us is that you'll only get people with the UFC chaperone and expect like 2 minutes mm-hmm. with a guy. So I'll be honest. I was debating if it was even worth doing.
Me
like We were going to go there, and yeah, we can do a quick little piece on the Fan Expo itself, but also we want to bank stuff for the future and get lots of clips.
We want to get content for the fight.
Yeah, like, is this really worth our while on a day where we're going to be working super late on the UFC show, the press conference afterwards? I mean, was this even worth going to? But we did go. I did want to see it, and it turned out there was no chaperone. We were just left to our own to just go up to anybody, talk to anyone.
Mm-hmm.
We interviewed people from Chuck Zito to Brad Tavares to Crime Time. I mean, all over the place. We must have done like 10 to 12 interviews at the Fan Expo. And it was essentially just much like WWE Fan Access. You know, they don't really want to stop the lines because people are there for autographs and photos. But you just wait till the lines kind of cool off. You take a few minutes with the guys. You're not doing 20 minutes with them.
You just have to be respectful and, you know, maybe give a bit of promotion to whatever they're appearing for at the time. And I thought it worked out great, you know. And you usually, like, you know, in the past, we'd be kind of left with sort of the lesser name guys just simply because there's so many – not as many people there, but because the UFC basically brought everybody in town for these things, even the lesser name guys were like pretty big names that we would talk to anyway.
Yeah, it really fits for our kind of demographic. And the best ones were, you know, instead of having to wait for lines to free up, there were a lot of guys just walking around that, you know, you and I could identify and boom, there's Ed Suarez. Let's grab him.
Yep.
And that turned out really well. So we got quite a lot there at the Fan Expo. Tito Ortiz was there, which was interesting. He was kind of shielded from everybody, so he wasn't doing interviews, it appeared.
He was there, and apparently Dana was told about this afterwards, and like Tito wasn't invited. He just
showed up.
He just showed up to see some friends.
Yep. Very newsworthy, I thought. Mm-hmm. So that was the Fan Expo, moved over to 175. It was a very strong card, and we were kind of just positioned in the back, did a lot of the scrum interviews for the undercard fights, and...
Although we did get to go out for the last two
fights. Yeah, I went out for both the last two. We were seated in different sections, I think.
Yeah.
So that was cool to me, just to be there. I've never been live for a Ronda Rousey fight. My God, she has the best entrance in MMA, yeah. And that place exploded when she came. Just her walk, yeah. The music is perfect, and I'm such a fan of fighters that they just use one song, so it's identifiable for them. That's just the pro wrestling side of me that you know.
Although I became a fan, though, of a song change in the case of Lyoto Machida coming out to House of Pain.
Jump around.
It was so odd because, I mean, he would come out in the past to Linkin Park. What did he come out to? Like, that Jay-Z Linkin Park, Crawling Encore, whatever.
I don't know if there's any music, though, that you would hear and say, I bet Lyoto listens to that. This guy doesn't seem to me as someone that even listens to music. Listens to, like, harps with, like, tonal change.
Well, listen, I don't know who told him to come out to jump around. Maybe it was Dana White. I'm sure Dana White is a big House of Pain fan.
Of course.
He's Irish, right? You know, I'm sure he loves House of Pain. You know, I whatever. But it got the place, like, you know, really, really, really hyped for his appearance. He was a big favorite. Like, he was a big crowd favorite.
Were you in a media section or were you with, like, fans?
I was, like, kind of right next to the Fox desk.
Oh, okay.
This was just auxiliary seating where, you know, like, if you ever go to a wrestling show, the cameras, like, basically the unsold tickets were the cameras.
Right, right. Okay,
yeah,
gotcha.
That's where I was.
Yeah, so, I mean, the main event was a great, great fight. Rousey's fight, it was just a spectacle, if not anything. And I mean, I love watching just a dominant performance like that. I will never complain about a short fight.
I did too. The only complaint I would have had was me losing out on $30 because I stupidly put $30 on Alexis Davis.
Yeah, that must have been a painful 16 seconds.
Well, you know, I was... Either way, I was entertained, you know?
Like, well, we went out... was it the Saturday night that we went out?
It was the night after.
Oh, the night after.
It was right after the press conference and everything.
So we went, and me and Wade got one night of gambling in where we went to play some roulette.
Well, I had never played anything in a casino before.
This is the easiest game in the world to play.
But then, like, you know, like, John and I... First of all, man, here's a tip if you're ever in Vegas, okay? And if you're on a budget, don't buy your drinks... at the casino. And certainly don't buy your drinks at the club, okay? If you have to, then go ahead. But, I mean, I made that stupid mistake. Even buying your drinks inside a casino, you're asking to pay upwards of maybe at least, you know, $6 to even $60.
Yeah, you went out with Ariel one night.
I don't even want to talk about that.
To Hakkasan.
We went to Hakkasan, which is the club in MGM. Yeah.
Way had a $25 rum and coke.
Well, listen, I'm not usually a club going guy, but I thought, you know, I'm in Vegas, I'm with some friends, why not have the experience? And I went, had the experience, paid whatever, however many dollars for our drinks. Nate Diaz was also there, so.
Oh wow!
I'm hoping that he enjoyed more star treatment than we did, but actually I had fun, I had a good time there too. But anyway, get your drinks. If you're in Vegas, buy everything, stock up in the convenience store.
That's the best way to go.
The convenience stores, you can buy like a beer for like $2, you know, $2, $3, if that. Whereas if you just take a step into the casinos, you're looking to pay at least like $6, $7. Anyway, that's only if you're cheap.
But so we did play some roulette. First, it was just me playing as Wei just observed and planted a strategy in mind. So I threw in $100. And was rapidly going through that 100 pretty quickly as Wei then stepped in.
What was
in.
Your strategy?
I didn't have a strategy. It was red or black.
John and I, like, were pretty much, like, we looked for the cheapest table, which was, like $10.
$10.
But that was probably the cheapest table at the MGM.
And the rest were, like, $100 minimums.
And we basically just kind of, we're the most, I'm assuming the most novice players there. Because the only bets that we would ever place would be either, like, the one, in the 50% chance one. So, like, either red, black, or odds and evens.
Yeah. I played a little, cause I always go with the number 28, because I've won on that number before. And did not win on it this time.
No.
It was not great. Within 45 minutes, I was down $200 and was out. Wei, on the other hand, though, made a profit, including erasing the Alexis Davis debt.
That was my whole intent, was to at least, you know, make back my Alexis Davis money. And I managed to do that. I came out, I left the table. I actually went on a bad roll at the end. So at one point, I think I was up to doubling my money. But eventually, I just left with $55. So not bad for my first time.
Yeah, not bad at all. I had fun. I don't care. I lost $200. I enjoy playing roulette. I wish I had just... Like, we went to some other casinos where it was, like, a dollar minimum. And I would have been fine to know that, hey, I'm going to lose $200, at least get to a longer play. It was 45 minutes and I was done.
Yeah, yeah.
I just wish I could have spaced it out a bit more. But yeah. That's what happens when you lose.
Yeah.
Over and over and over.
When you're at the MGM, I assume, like, that's sort of more of a high-end casino. Whereas if you went up to the old Vegas.
Fremont Street.
That was an experience, too.
Yeah, that was Sunday that we went out there, because the main reason for going out there was Wade did want to see Fremont Street, but more importantly, a little white wedding chapel.
A little white wedding chapel.
Which we nearly had some confusion when we were in the cab on our way there, and this guy was like, a tunnel? Well, I don't think there's a tunnel at this one. I'm like, we need to get to the white wedding chapel that's got the tunnel. The Tunnel of Love.
And
we did get to the right one.
We did. I mean, I proceeded to even explain the storyline, thinking that this guy might even know. You know, like, I mean, this infamous Triple H Stephanie storyline. I imagine every Vegas resident would know about this pro wrestling storyline from the Attitude Era. No, he had
surprisingly not.
He had no clue. But he did know the chapel. He told us that this was the place where Elvis got married.
And, of course, Michael Jordan and Joan Collins, as it said on
the... Is that actually true?
That's what it says on the sign.
All right.
As Triple H pointed out as well when he pulled up.
So, you know, we weren't even sure that this was the right one, but we approached, and sure enough, it looked exactly like it looked.
I took one look at the window. It was like, this is it. This is 100% it.
We walk up, and it looked exactly like it looked on the episode of Raw, complete with Talk of the Town right across the street.
Yes.
The sign for the strippers and adult books right next to it.
Barely still in business.
It was weird. It was, like, all boarded up. But then, like, we actually walked in closer, and there was, like, a man peeking out of it. So it was so creepy. Like,
man. It's like a reverse peep show.
Yeah, you look out. You look at the street. Like, you know, like, if you – for people who've never been to Vegas, like, basically, you know, the Strip is sort of where all the new developments are. And it's sort of – when people refer to Las Vegas, like, I think everybody kind of talks about that now. That's where all the big casinos are. That's where all the fights happen. And then Old Vegas, it's sort of like it's old.
You know, it's just
like, it looks so run down.
That's where I stayed once when me and Dan Lavransky went to the Cauliflower Alley Club reunion.
Yeah, old, and like there's just a stretch even approaching Fremont that's just like super kind of scary and creepy. That's where the Pawn Stars are.
Yeah, they were doing this random signing at the store. It was just
a bunch of beat down old places. A lot of drive through chapels, wedding chapels. A lot of nasty looking strip clubs. And I mean, I love looking at that stuff. Like
I love nasty strip clubs.
Whatever. I love like just like there's a lot of personality there, you know. And contrast that with like sort of the bright, shiny, very expensive Las Vegas that I think we're more used to at the beginning of this trip. I thought it was kind of cool to see.
Yeah, we did a lot of walking. Yeah. The point that when we finally got to the Mandalay Bay later that night, I was exhausted by the first fight. It's like, my God, we are going to watch 11 fights here. And yeah. I was so tired at the beginning of that show.
Yeah. We actually even got to see a couple get married.
Yeah, that's right. We thought they were just doing some photo op. But no, they were actually getting married.
No. I always thought, like, I mean, these places just kind of existed as, like, tourist destinations. I didn't think people actually
got married. Oh, no. It's got to pay the rent.
We saw this couple, you know, with two of their friends drive up in this rented Mercedes. I guess they were kind of dressed up. Like, one of them was wearing white. That was good enough. And then they took some photos. They were actually handed the same certificate.
They didn't get the $40 wedding ceremony only. They got the higher package.
They got the photos, yeah, too.
I think they paid a good 80 for it.
And they probably... did they get the tips for how to have a successful marriage? Did they get that?
That... Hard to tell.
I'm not sure.
Hard to tell.
But... So that was, you know, something to witness. We took our photos, which you can all see on the cover art or also on my Instagram.
Yeah. We should have done the drive through if we had a car.
We should have.
Yeah. Maybe we could have just paid the cab driver a little more.
We should have.
We should have actually got married. No, yeah, no, yeah, yeah.
I don't know how far we could actually take
this. I don't think I legally could. I don't think that's legal for me.
I don't know. I beg to differ. I feel like in Vegas you can do anything. I mean, we were trying to, like, I wanted to ask our cab driver if, like, gay marriage was legal, but then I thought, fuck, of course it's illegal here. Like, what isn't legal? It's just that was just the feeling I ended up with, like, in my from spending 5 days in Vegas. It's just, man, the amount of freedom that you know, people enjoy in this town. You can drink anywhere. You can buy a drink.
You can drink a beer in the back of a cab.
You can buy a drink from a restaurant. You can take it out with you. You can go inside a cab with it. You could smoke anywhere. Not that I smoke, but, and not that I even want people to smoke anywhere, but just, I just feel like it was just, I guess, almost a bit of a shock to me to just think, wow, there really are not many rules here. The only rules are, you know, just pay for things.
Yeah. We went through when me and Jason Agnew came back from Las Vegas a few years ago. I remember we briefly went through that phase where in Toronto we would have a beer and we just leave the restaurant or the bar with it and just drink it in the street.
That's the way. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it's hard to debate. We're not here to have that debate. But I mean, we live in Toronto where you can't even buy liquor in most places after 9 o'clock.
Crazy.
You can't buy liquor on holidays, on weekends. You can't buy it after, you know, 7 or something. So, anyway.
That was the trip to Vegas. Actually, let's finish off with the story of coming back at the airport where we went to check in. And for whatever reason, Wei couldn't check in. And this was very strange. Me and Ariel had no problems doing it on the computer. They sent Wei to a desk where we found out that they inputted his name in the wrong order. So his first name was Ting, and his full name was all scrambled together, essentially, and therefore they had to unbook you and then rebook you. And in the process of doing this, someone took your seat, and then you got sent to the back of the plane.
This was very risky because the other flight to Toronto somehow had some mechanical malfunction.
Yeah, the Air Canada flight.
So a lot of people were stranded. Thankfully, we were on a different airline, but that meant that all the people from that flight were trying to get onto our flight.
And they were charging $600 for a one-way flight to Toronto from Las Vegas.
And here I was with all this bullshit happening to me with only like 3 seats remaining on the flight.
And you had to still go downstairs to get your carnet signed off.
I was not in a good mood. I don't know if you could tell.
Oh, I was as frustrated as you were. And first of all, this woman had no idea what a carnet was and was pretty much trying to convince us to just go without it. It's like, well, are you going to buy us a new camera if they confiscate it? Is that okay? Like, I was explaining, we have to get this done. I don't know why you're not familiar with this, but it's how many people are familiar with this carnet? It's got to be like 3 people out there in these airports. Anyway, thankfully you got on this plane okay. Completely their fault.
Yep.
And at one point, Wei literally apologized for his name. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry.
I was almost like, I was sarcastic. Like, it was actually my fault for not having an English name. I should just change my name to Bob.
Bob Smith.
Yeah.
So there you go. The trip to Las Vegas. And now we're going to take a trip to Los Angeles in November of 1999 for this edition of Raw. I'm very glad you decided to pick. It was a very random pick, but completely tied in to our trip to Las Vegas.
It wasn't completely random. Like, we knew we were going to Vegas.
I guess it wasn't random in the least.
Yeah.
This was a very memorable edition of Raw. I think to this day, most people remember the Triple H-Stephanie marriage, which became an actual marriage years later. And to this day, they are the central figures on Raw.
How many pro wrestling on-screen marriages have resulted in that? Usually it's the reverse. I mean, at least in one instance, you know? How many times has a pro wrestling marriage resulted in a real-life marriage?
Yeah, many times breakups have occurred when you've done the breakup on television. And sometimes when you pair two people together, they, in storyline, it does lead to relationships afterwards. I'm not going to use examples because one of them will be a downer. But let's move on.
Which one?
You'll think about it soon enough.
Never mind.
This was the very first WWE event at the brand new Staples Center, which Jim Ross referred to as Staples Arena throughout this entire show, unfortunately, which was even worse when they showed the scene setter outside where it clearly said Staples Center, but I guess Jim Ross had it written down Staples Arena all night long.
Staples Arena, whatever.
Same thing. What's the difference between a center and an arena? Do we know? Is it a word?
Arena or center? I mean, I guess centers don't have to be arenas, but all arenas are
centers. What is it the center of?
Don't ask me.
This was, and now this arena, of course, has become the home of SummerSlam every single year. And the show begins with Jim Ross proclaiming, "We are sold out in anticipation of the wedding between Stephanie McMahon and Test." That has brought the people out for this big show.
Up until this point, how many weddings have there been on WWF TV?
Well, there was the famous one with Uncle Elmer way back on Tuesday Night Titans was the show back on the USA Network, but that was years ago.
What was that? What do you mean, Uncle Elmer?
Uncle Elmer, the farmer. This was back in the 80s.
Who did he get married to?
He got married to his legitimate wife.
Okay.
And then there was Savage and Elizabeth. And outside of that, there weren't too many weddings on WWE programming that I can think of.
So the first of the Attitude Era.
Yes, definitely the first. I believe the first wedding they ever did on Raw. Mm-hmm. We'd later get the excellent Kane Lita wedding.
We've had so many weddings since then. I mean, after this, the wedding has sort of become almost a pro wrestling cliche.
It's typically always a big ratings mover, doing a big wedding. We have to one day review the Kane Lita one. That's my favorite one of all time.
Let's do the whole storyline.
I loved it. I loved that storyline so much. That's where I really became such a fan of the Kane character, was that whole summer with Lita, and it ended with the Snitsky punting the baby. Oh, it was tremendous. Fantastic stuff.
All right. Sounds great.
Out comes WWF champion The Big Show. Long-haired Big Show, who had just won the title 2 weeks prior at the Survivor Series. We even got a shout-out to TSN, the then-broadcasting partner of the WWF. And we start off the show with Big Show and the aforementioned Kane with his first-ever girlfriend, Tori. The first Tori.
This is how they introduced Tori.
Yeah, that's how she should have been keyed. Kane's first girlfriend.
Kane's first girlfriend.
Which is bullshit, because Katie Vick.
That's right.
Not keeping their storyline straight.
They weren't actually dating, though.
Yeah, they were.
Are you sure?
Yeah, that was Kane's girlfriend, who he murdered by mistake.
I thought they just always had a thing. Like, I thought they're like kind of friends, but never officially dating.
No need to revisit it. And they were going to take on the Big Boss Man and Viscera. Boy, what a shitty match on paper.
Yeah.
I was very excited for this. Big Boss Man was the hardcore champion, and they announced the number one contender for the WWF title at the next pay-per-view. I don't know if it was just me, but throughout this show, as they were promoting all the matches, this sounded like the worst pay-per-view ever. Vince McMahon against Triple H, Big Show against the Big Boss Man, Viscera and some other big guy against the Hollies. Oh my God, these matches just sounded horrific. It was Viscera and Rikishi against the Hollies. Sounded terrible. A show I don't want to review. There was a big boot by Big Show to Boss Man. When I say big boot, it's like Big Show just did as much as he could to get his leg in the air, and the heels would run into the boot. Kane hit a top rope clothesline to Viscera. Then X-Pac ran in and hit a chair to the back of Kane, and then an X-Factor on top of the chair. Viscera splashed him and pinned Kane at a minute 35. And then Tori got into X-Pac's face. He spits in Tori's face and hits a spin kick that Jim Ross calls bile. That was bile.
Yeah.
It was short. That will be the positive.
There's no match here, and thank goodness for that.
There were a lot of no matches on this show.
Yeah. I mean, we reviewed a lot of Raws at this point where really the matches were afterthoughts to the storylines. And in some cases,
these are like angles covered up as matches.
Yeah, in some cases, I mean, they're probably better off for it, like a match like this. Do you think TSN would have cut away from this kick?
Oh, probably. Yeah. If we had watched the Canadian feed, I bet they did do a crowd shot. They were just notorious. Any male on female violence.
All the, and it's even more perplexing because this is a, the same Tory who would later turn on Kane and fall for this man who...
Well, that's after they had to spend Christmas together after Kane lost a match, putting his first girlfriend up for grabs.
Right. Okay.
They showed a video package on the whole love story involving Test and Stephanie. Test had first proposed to Stephanie on SmackDown, and then they did a UK pay-per-view where the Bulldog, British Bulldog, got upset in a locker room and threw a garbage can, and there was like this five-second delay before they realized that this garbage can connected with Stephanie's head and knocked her out cold. This resulted in Stephanie having amnesia and losing all her short-term memory and thus forgot about her feelings for Test and then regained her memory and proposed to Test. Details I had forgotten about.
Oh, man. I hate it when that happens.
I think part of this had to do with the fact that they were doing the Test and Stephanie storyline right at the time when Vince Russo and Ed Ferrara left in October, and they prolonged this proposal because I think that was one of the lingering storylines, was they didn't know how they were going to end it with Test and Stephanie, so they did the amnesia deal, I believe, to prolong it and come up with an ending that ultimately played out with this being the payoff.
Makes sense to me.
DX comes out featuring Billy Gunn's t-shirt, which on the front read "All This" and on the back "And a Really Great Ass Too." One of the forgotten great t-shirts.
Did they ever sell that?
Probably not.
Oh, too bad.
Probably right up there with the Vince Loves Cock shirt as collector's items.
They did sell that one, though.
Yeah. And the Always Pounding Ass shirt for the APA. Mm-hmm. Some great ones. Then their music stopped and some weird disco music started playing. And I thought there was another window open on my computer. But no, this was in the arena, and Triple H even called attention to it. Mm. This is very bizarre. Yeah. I've never seen this before in a WWF setting.
It seemed like a miscue. Like, it was almost as if the...
I don't even know what this music was. Well, it's like elevator music.
It was like the audio guy probably had a window running in the background, even before YouTube, though. Maybe he was downloading MP3s.
Yeah, this led to a very awkward moment, as Triple H was trying to play off of it, but didn't do a very good job.
His mic was also off.
Yeah.
So that was weird. Jeez. Audio guy had a bad segment.
Not a good night. Hunter says how Vince McMahon crossed the line and he has gotten a TOP, a temporary order of protection against Vince McMahon, and he cannot come within 50 feet of DX, and they show why. And this is maniac Vince McMahon in a car driving into another car featuring DX. Whoa. As Vince McMahon pounds the gas. God damn it! Complete justification for a TOP.
Yeah.
This was nuts. And then Vince gets out of the car and starts beating the car with a baseball bat. Completely insanity.
It was quite the freak out. What was exactly where the babyface heel dynamics here at the time? Because what was Vince?
Vince was a babyface at this point. A raving lunatic babyface.
The whole corporation? Was that corporation even around?
Well, what they had done was... In July, they had built up, because the Austin-Vince feud had gone about as far as you could go, so they did this big pay-per-view where it was Austin-Undertaker, and either Austin leaves or Vince left. Mm-hmm. And Austin won, and Vince had to disappear, and that meant he disappeared for about a month. Came back as a babyface, and that's where he won the WWF title, and then vacated it, if you remember.
He won that as a babyface?
He won that as a babyface.
A babyface move?
From Triple H.
Oh my God.
So he won the title... And was a babyface during this whole period. Triple H then won the title back in a match not involving Vince McMahon. And Vince just remained a babyface at this point.
All right.
So that's our catch-up. Vince comes out and says he will have Hunter's blood on his hands at Armageddon. And it will be game over. The first of probably many, many uses of that term in retaliation to Triple H.
Yeah, because he's the game.
He says he's going to give his future son-in-law Test a wedding present tonight, a match against Triple H. Plus, he is booking a six-man tag with the New Age Outlaws and X-Pac, taking on Mankind, The Rock, and a partner of their choosing, and says no one other than family members are allowed to get involved with the wedding tonight or else they will be fired. And this was in response to Hunter saying in his promo that there will be no wedding later tonight. So they were setting up everything for that big angle at the end of the show. Al Snow is in the back talking to Head, stating that he wants to be The Rock and Mankind's partner, and he was mocking The Rock's eyebrow because at this point they were doing Al Snow essentially being jealous of The Rock, and
he was the jealous friend.
The jealous friend of Mick Foley.
Mm-hmm.
Matt Hardy came out, accompanied by Jeff Hardy and Terry, who was barely contained by a sweater. She walked down.
What an odd combo.
The Hardys and Terry.
Yeah.
This was a...
didn't work at all.
This was their benefit of winning the tit tournament.
Yes.
The Terry Invitational.
Mm-hmm. Which had happened just a month prior.
Yeah, and they showed highlights of this, the ladder match. Very smart on their part. This was a full month after No Mercy. And I always hate when you... It's like a pay-per-view's over, you forget it. But they really hammered that ladder match home and still remembered to this day.
Yeah, it was great. And really, I mean, that match was their breakthrough match that kind of ushered in that whole era of the three, the TLC guys.
And this was that kind of buffer period for Edge and Christian where they were still baby faces and hadn't really reached their real potential with that heel run where they got to expose their personality. I mean, they were kind of just... These were a bunch of great workers, but really no substance to them at this point in time.
Mm-hmm.
So it was Matt Hardy against Edge, which I guess apropos that these two would be involved in a failed wedding in some form or fashion. Yeah. They would be the groomsmen later on.
I suppose.
Yes. Edge was accompanied by Christian, and this match was brought to you by WrestleMania 2000 on N64. And boy, did I feel old later when they showed clips of the WrestleMania 2000 game. I was like, man, this looks like shit.
Yeah.
Holy fuck. You know, and at the time, I was blown away by this game.
Here's the thing that's weird is that, like, you know, anytime you, for me at least, I watch these wrestling shows and I don't think, oh, things don't really look all that different. I mean, there's still the Titantron, they're still in the big arena, the ring still looks the same. Like, everything looks relatively similar to how wrestling is portrayed today. When you really feel that time has passed, though, is when you look at video games from 15 years ago and just the transformation between then and now. Holy shit, like, they've come a long way.
Yeah, 100%. They mentioned that both Edge and Matt Hardy, along with Jeff and Christian, will be groomsmen tonight. And they show highlights, as I mentioned, the ladder match from No Mercy, and then the match began. They had 3 minutes, which essentially consisted of how much stuff can we get into 3 minutes. And they managed to get a decent amount. There was a flapjack by Edge. Hardy came back with a tornado DDT off the second rope and then a leg drop. Hardy then jumps off into a reverse atomic drop. Edge hits him with a bridging German. There's a superplex by Matt, who then gets crotched on the top. Edge drop kicks him to the floor into the cameraman. I'm sure you... Have you ever experienced this way?
I've never shot... I mean, actually, I got to shoot some footage at a Ring of Honor show once, ringside, and
no one got drop kicked onto you.
No.
You missed.
Came close though.
You missed that show we did. Oh man, I can't remember the name of the. It was the show that featured Hulk Hogan in Brantford, and Tyler Thornley was my cameraman, and he was ringside shooting, and Scott Steiner just like threw him out of the way.
Awesome,
it was great.
Oh, a big weekend for Scott Steiner and you. And
oh, that was the weekend, yes, where I made my Botchamania debut.
Yeah.
There was a Pescado by Matt Hardy to Christian, and then Edge with a Topicon Hilo to the floor onto Jeff. And then the referee was distracted with Jeff Hardy on the apron, and Christian shoved Matt into a spear by Edge, and it finished as they were showing a replay. So you saw the finish in the double box at 3 minutes and 6 seconds. A rare snafu, but one nonetheless. I've never seen this before.
They unfortunately picked the worst time to cut to a replay, missing the finish. What I took away from the match was just, you know, how much more high-flying and risk-taking these two were doing than obviously later on in their careers. And, you know, for all that effort, I thought it was just okay. I thought they certainly, you know, became way better workers later on, even with the toned-down style. Here, it just seemed like we had this amount of TV time. We're going to do anything we can to catch attention of the people who don't know us right now.
Yeah, it's amazing to me. You look at Edge and all four of these guys. I mean, they came in, and I think part of the appeal was you knew these four were such big fans growing up. And it's amazing when you hear when Edge was on with Jericho's podcast that since he's retired – he's never watched any wrestling. That's amazing when you think about it.
I imagine doing it for so long, you probably get it out of your system.
100%.
And who knows what else might have been behind the scenes that, you know, probably, I don't know, bothered them.
There was the first of many segments of Stephanie's bachelorette party in Las Vegas. This looked like quite the bachelorette party in a room where two of the eight people were over the age of 70, involving Moolah, Mae Young, and they decided to play Truth or Dare. And Stephanie chose Truth. And she was asked in much toned down language if she fucked Test on GTV. And she said, I cannot kiss or tell. And they toasted to Stephanie.
Watching this, it's hard to imagine that this was the same Stephanie McMahon that we see on TV today. I mean, here, she just looked, when she first debuted on TV, including, you know, this portion of her career on screen, she just looked so incredibly innocent, you know, and especially with the lighter makeup, I don't know, just even her body language. She actually just seemed like a little girl here, you know, didn't really seem all that confident. But then you see later iterations of her character, especially the way she carries herself now, it's a complete difference.
Well, she would have only been 21, 22 at this time. I mean, mm-hmm. You don't really notice, like, I mean, Christ, this was 15 years ago at this point, and you've pretty much seen her on TV with, like, you know, in and out periods, but
we really, like, I mean, it's a case of seeing somebody grow up, like, right in front of us.
China comes out for a fantastic segment. This was after the hammer angle, where Jericho had attacked her with a hammer. I can guarantee you TSN cut away during that segment. So she's got a cast on for the thumb, and says her thumb is feeling better after she whacked Jericho with a hammer, and she was asked why she didn't press charges against Chris Jericho, and that's because she wants to punish him and make him cry like a whiny baby, and calls out Chris Jericho. And out comes Jericho in his pleather pants, and he does like a babyface move here where he says, "Welcome to Raw is," and lets the fans yell Jericho, and calls China a jacked up mutant who has a flabby jello ass, and says he cannot compete tonight due to the shots he took via the hammer on SmackDown. And we go back to this SmackDown. This just looked absolutely ridiculous, where China whacked him twice in the head with a hammer and says he has a serious concussion. He's almost crying here. Says as a result of these hammer shots, he had a horrible Thanksgiving and could not play with his children. This was hilarious on many fronts. The first being that SmackDown aired on a Thursday night, which coincided with Thanksgiving. And second of all, this was 4 years before he had his first child. So, very funny. Calls it a love tap that he gave to China and simply broke her nail, and says they are going to have a match at Armageddon, the latest selling feature to this dreaded pay-per-view, and says that he is going to end her embarrassment of a career. And China is so painful how they were. She was like, "Wow, Chris, you sound fired up. You need to chill out. You've got to chill out. I think you need to chill out," which prompted Miss Kitty, who was China's slave at the time, to come out with a fire extinguisher and chill him out. God, this felt like shitty dialogue for, like, Dr. Freeze.
Well, maybe that will cool you down.
Oh, God. This was horrible. Horrible, horrible, horrible.
And it got the most muted reaction. Like, usually
no one cared about
these
this.
Big visual spots would elicit some type of, you know, cheer. This really got nothing. Like, everybody had seen this before.
And I don't think anyone was really invested in this male versus female thing. I think a lot of people saw Chris Jericho as coming in with impact. And, I don't know, this China feud did very little for me.
Sure. I will say, though, you know, I'm usually not a fan, in hindsight, of watching these Jericho promos and his whiny kind of teenage character, but I found him pretty entertaining here.
They go back to the bachelorette party where Melvin Gillard walked in and poured champagne on them.
What?
He looked like Melvin Gillard with the blonde hair.
Not to me.
Well, anyway. Comes in, he pours champagne for all of them. And that was it. That was the whole segment. Mm-hmm. We had the cover of Entertainment Weekly with Steve Austin and Ivory on the cover. Mm-hmm. And the Godfather comes out with his L.A. hose. He does his intro And they cut to a sign that said, "Pimpin' is easy in L.A."
This guy, I mean, his gimmick.
He was so over as a...
So over.
The undercard, you know, fun undercard act.
Yeah. Only to be contrasted with...
Steve Blackman, the lethal weapon.
A man whose entrance basically consists of black pants.
Steve Blackman. Yeah. More known today for coaching Dennis Bermudez.
He's still coaching?
Still works with them, I believe.
No, that's... Well, I mean, obviously not coaching him with interviews.
Steve Blackman attacks him with kicks, a drop kick, runs into a big boot and clothesline, and finishes the Godfather with the brogue kick, pins him in a minute, and goes to the back. Because we're building up to Steve Blackman and Kurt Angle at Armageddon.
All right.
God damn. Nothing to say about this. The APA are in the back playing cards with the Dudleys, who are pretending they can't play poker, and they need to learn the rules. And Bubba's asking, what beats four aces? Farouk says, a gun. And this led to a joke about Bubba's mom. And we just continued on with this card game. Go back to the Vegas party. They're dancing. May starts doing the crotch chop. Al Snow is talking to Mankind.
This is like a real dud of a party.
This was not a lot of fun. Al Snow is telling Mankind he needs to be his partner tonight. Says The Rock can just stay on the apron. To which Mankind says, if you don't tag The Rock in, you're going to get booed out of the building. And Al Snow mocks him, saying he hates the eyebrow, hates the people's elbow. And Mankind says, hey, I'm with you. I'd love for you to be the partner. Next up was a tag match with Too Cool, accompanied by Rikishi, against Hardcore and Crash Holly. And Hardcore cuts off his music, tells Too Cool that they aren't super heavyweights, but Rikishi is. Calls him a tub of guts, makes a bunch of fat jokes, says his ass has more dimples than a golf ball, and with a few more meals, he's going to be Santa Claus. Just had all of the fat jokes lined up here. Mm. And Rikishi then sends Crash into the steps and then into the ring to start the match. Scotty does the worm to Crash. Scotty then holds up Crash for a leg drop off the top by Brian Christopher, who pins Crash in 51 seconds. Like, there's nothing to say about these matches. It's like pile of moves squashed into a minute. And then after the match, Hardcore attacks Too Cool. Rikishi hits a belly-to-belly and a bonsai drop to Hardcore Holly, and then puts on the goggles and dances with Christopher and Scotty.
I feel like at this time they probably realized, or at least had the belief, that the draw to these shows weren't matches, weren't actual wrestling.
It was sing-along promos, dancing, it was the characters.
Storyline, it was a soap opera element, and, you know, that's the style of TV. I did, however, love these two versions of these teams. I thought Too Cool were obviously at their peak when they're paired with Rikishi, and just doing, I mean, I thought they were hilarious. And I thought the Hollies were great too, you know. Bob Holly with his super heavyweight gimmick, carrying the scales, and even introducing Crash. That was probably my favorite version of Bob Holly.
We go back to the Vegas party, and Carlos the Electrician comes in. Might have had a 12-inch mechanical penis.
Maybe. Probably
the Electrician.
He probably ordered him from the orgasm clinic.
He says... He's introduced as Carlos the Electrician, and the person who brings him in says, I hope he doesn't shock you. Oh. And May slaps his ass and starts dancing for the women, and then Moolah and Mae Young take him away to do God knows what with Carlos. Up next was Triple H and Test in Test's wedding gift. Referee comes out in a Vince McMahon mask. So the idea was this could be Vince McMahon violating the TOP. But we never did find out the identity of this referee. Test attacks Hunter to start the match. They cut to the back, and Pat Patterson and Briscoe are finding this referee to be hilarious. And they're yelling, Vince! Vince, come watch this! As Pat's eating a chocolate bar. Hunter was in control.
That was funny.
Vince, come watch this!
Pat Patterson was just very funny here. Like, it was such a non sequitur. Like, why? I don't even know why. But it was very funny.
I thought this was a very dull match.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe it was just because my head had been trained to watch one-minute matches that this eight-minute match dragged that much more.
No, it was because it was Triple H and Tess who, you know, let's be honest here. Tess was not very good.
And the argument at the time was, with this whole angle, that the pay-per-view should have been Test going for revenge for Stephanie, and that should have been the headline match that really made Test instead of Vince McMahon. And you can certainly make that argument. I mean, Triple H and Vince was like a 30-minute match, and it was horrible. And I can't imagine Test would have been worse, but he wasn't ready to be a main event guy. I think that's a fair assessment of Test in 1999. Mm-hmm. So just a very long match. Sleeper was applied to Test. He escaped, DDT'd Hunter. The crowd did somewhat get into him when he was making his comebacks. Hunter rolled to the floor, and Test came off the apron and got hit in the chest, got knocked into the announce desk, and they kept playing up that he was going to get his nose broken again and ruin the wedding photos. So that was the story of the match, that he was going to look hideous for his wedding. And Hunter would end up hitting him with a knee to the face. Referee would not count the three, so Hunter then decks the referee, goes for the mask when Shane runs in with a chair shot to Hunter, and Test hits an elbow drop off the top, and it's a fast count by the fake referee, and Test gets the win over Triple H. And they show Hunter smiling in the ring as Shane, the referee, and Test leave to the back. And no reveal later of who this referee was.
No, from the body language, though, it certainly did kind of look like Vince, although we never did know.
Yeah, this might have been something that continued afterwards, but I don't remember it at all.
Pat Patterson, they cut back at one point, and he's just like, Vince, come out, watch this. Don't even flush it, just come out. It's really funny.
Don't flush it, because we've got a turd on TV as well. This wasn't that bad, but it was not a great match.
No.
More from Vegas as Moolah and May return, and a special drink is given to Stephanie, who downs the shot. And this was quite the commercial for Coors Light. It's the only beer being served.
Oh, wow. Uh-oh. Maybe
with Austin off TV, they needed to, I guess, get the Coors Light mentions in, and this was an excuse.
But they never did make it clear what was the drink responsible for getting her drunk or getting her drugged.
Ooh,
up.
Maybe Coors Light. They do not want to be associated with a...
could have been Coors Light.
A drugged wedding. Hunter is backstage yelling at the police, which was so funny. These police couldn't even keep a straight face. And he told them to go arrest Vince because he clearly violated the order as the referee. And as they walk away, one guy is just the biggest smirk on his face. Like, they couldn't even do a retake of this. Just hilarious. My favorite segment of the night was next. Michael Cole is in the ring, and he throws to highlights of the Gravy Bowl on SmackDown involving Miss Kitty and Ivory. And in Michael Cole's serious news voice, instructed us that during the Gravy Bowl match, Miss Kitty had a mushroom lodged in her throat and was saved by an EMT. Ivory got so upset at this EMT that she tore her shirt off. And Michael Cole says, I'd now like to welcome out this EMT, Barbara Bush.
Could you just imagine, like, Michael Cole, who had done some war correspondence, and all of a sudden finds himself in this situation?
A mushroom. Lodged in a woman's throat named Miss Kitty. So out comes Barbara Bush, who says, let me first say my friends call me BB. And explains that she has been volunteering at the WWF. She's an intern. And she doesn't know what Ivory was thinking, but I want to challenge her to an evening gown match.
Logical, totally logical.
Of course, of course. Yeah, somebody... I don't want to press charges. I don't want a TOP. I want to have my TOP ripped off. Mm. Ivory comes out, the women's champion, calling her Babs, and says BB could stand for blonde bimbo, big boobs, or bird brain. Calls the fans perverts, which they cheered. And then she attacks BB and takes her shirt off. And Jim Ross's observation is...
No, that she took her own shirt off first.
Yeah, she took her shirt off.
Well, I don't know why.
Yeah, maybe she was giving BB an advantage in this impromptu stripper match. And Jim Ross just says, that is a large bra she is wearing, in reference to BB, which was, I guess, a play off of Double D. She was... Double B, maybe? I don't know. I don't know what this had to do with anything. For those curious, this would lead to another huge match at Armageddon, the evening gown pool match, which was famous for Miss Kitty taking her top off on a pay-per-view.
Oh, okay.
Wonderful.
Any excuse to get naked.
Yeah.
Is what it seemed.
Vince McMahon was defending himself to the police, saying he has an alibi with Pat Patterson and Briscoe, because he was taking a shit during this match. And Patterson even said, you can smell that he was in the washroom. And the police buy the story and they leave him. Val Venus comes out and he says he and Shaq both carry intimidating size. Shaq is shaky on the outside, but something along the lines of Val Venus's ball scores every time inside. Clever shit.
Yeah, I get it.
Yeah. Kurt Angle comes out, says LA lacks integrity and moral value, and he is upset that they would cheer a porn star over him. And we had a match with Val Venus and Kurt. They fought on the floor. Venus got sent into the steps. Blue Thunder powerbomb by Val Venus.
He does that a lot.
Yes. There were knees to the abdomen of Angle, a reverse Russian leg sweep, spine buster, and then Venus climbs to the top when the British Bulldog runs out, crotches Venus from the floor, and Angle suplexes him off the corner. Venus kicks out. Then Venus is sent to the floor, and he attacks the Bulldog. Angle then attacks Venus, brings him back into the ring. Bulldog hits Venus in the back with a chair, and Angle hits the Angle Slam, which at the time was called the Reverse Fireman's Carry, for the win at 3:18. Marathon match by raw standards.
But another nothing match. And, you know, another run-in finish by a British Bulldog character that was pretty dry back then.
We got a shot of the groomsmen backstage, the Hardys, Edge, Christian, and Meat.
That's right.
Meat.
Meat. Was he known as Meat or was he known as Sean Stasiak?
They called him Sean Stasiak when he came out, but he'll always be Meat during this era for me. Al Snow is pleading to Mankind and is running down the Rock as the Rock shows up from behind. And he's wearing an unzipped jacket with no shirt and begins to cut this promo where, in this vacuum, he comes across like the most arrogant asshole you would ever meet. Mm-hmm. Talks in the most unnatural tone. It sounded like he was cutting a sermon here. And speaks to Mankind but will not directly address Al, who he refers to him as. And says for Mankind to instruct for him to go, put a hockey stick up his ass, and walks off. And Mankind finds this amusing, and Al is pissed. And essentially, Al is not going to be part of the match. New Age Outlaws and X-Pac against The Rock, Mankind, and Kane. Road Dogg, at this point, a heel, but still doing the babyface intro, and the crowd totally took to the Outlaws as babyfaces. Hated X-Pac when they introduced him. And Billy Gunn working with his t-shirt on, because you just got to get sales of that shirt up. Jim Ross, during this match, took a shot at the critics who are refusing to read Mankind's new book and review it. And Mankind hits a baseball slide, sending Road Dogg to the floor. We should mention, this crowd exploded when The Rock came out. Just a gigantic reaction, and Jim Ross sold it like God was walking out here to the Staples Arena / Center.
By far the biggest star on the show, Austin wasn't around at the time.
Yeah, he was out with his neck injury, which just had been just taken off TV a few weeks ago with the car deal. And this, it was the easiest match in the world to put together. It was just get the heat on Mankind, hot tag to The Rock, crowd goes nuts, he comes in, attacks everybody, Rock just goes through everybody, there's a Rock Bottom to Billy Gunn, but for the finish, Al Snow runs in before The Rock can get the win, and attacks all of the heels with his head, and the DQ is called at 4:19, Rock gets upset, hits Al Snow with a people's elbow, giant pop, crowd doesn't care about the non-finish, they just want to see The Rock and his moves. And therefore, went across fine.
Another.
Welcome to 1999 WWF television. Mm-hmm. That's what this was. We go back to the poker game with the Dudleys and AP. Do you feel like, my God, this is only a 2-hour show, and I feel there were more segments on this than anything.
I definitely felt that watching this show.
I thought
a 2-hour show would be a little easier to watch, but then like I had moments where like I felt like I'd watched a lot already, and I was only at the halfway mark. You know, I felt like we should have been at the wedding segment by now, but it definitely felt like a longer show than usual.
It's not like you got those long segments, but you got so many short ones.
Yeah, exactly.
Back to the poker game with the Dudleys and APA. Bubba is stuttering. This annoys Farouk, who mocks him. And this was basically a backdrop to take shots at Public Enemy, making fun of their careers and being run out of the WWF, essentially. And Bubba reveals that he has six aces. This led to a brawl. And
six aces instead of
yeah. Oh, instead of eight. That would be years later.
Yeah.
And Bubba threatened to kill Bradshaw. I'm sure many of the mid-carders threatened to kill Bradshaw behind the scenes at this time period. The groomsmen are all getting ready. Stephanie's in her dress. They even took out an ad in USA Today promoting this wedding. And they just show DX in their locker room laughing to give the idea they have a plan here. And now we are all set. The arena is all decked out for the wedding. And they introduced the wedding party. Such clever names here for some of the women, which included such hits as Mandy Bam Bam and Jen Jenny. Jen Jenny was my favorite.
I thought it was Mandy Van Dam.
It probably was. Yeah. It probably was, because I thought I heard Bam Bam, but Van Dam sounds better. Jen Jenny, though, is what I heard.
Jen Jenny.
Jen Jenny. Tess came out to his theme music, as every man wants to at his theme music.
Yeah, of course.
Vince comes out with Stephanie. I was amazed at how many anti-wedding signs there were in this crowd, from just say no, don't do it, Test. Mm-hmm. Great. Then the singers were out to sing a song for them.
This is so awesome.
This was the song they used for the Savage Elizabeth wedding, which Jim Johnston wrote, which is probably why they used it, because they had the copyright to
that
it.
That is perfect.
Yeah, so they got some reuse out of it 8 years later.
This was about the cheesiest.
It was so corny.
It was so cheesy that, I mean, I'm sure...
The shots to Test, who just couldn't keep a straight face. At one point, he burst out laughing during this song. He was like, everyone at home was like, what am I doing? It was awesome.
He might have been thinking that. But I thought her facials, I thought Stephanie's facials were perfect in this, too.
I thought they did a great job of just cutting to the people in the wedding, to the reactions.
Like sort of like young, nervous, innocent couple who are about to, you know, take a big step in their lives.
The crowd popped as soon as the priest asked if anyone opposes this marriage, and you think that no one is, and Triple H's music hits. And he comes out, and Triple H here mumbled all his words. I thought maybe he had been drugged before this promo. As he threw the video, he said, "From the bottom of my felt, think you should see this." Live TV. So we cut to the video of Hunter in the car pulling up to the little white wedding chapel across from the talk of the town. Got the $40 wedding ceremony and this, the gasp of the fans when they revealed Stephanie in the passenger seat passed out.
Listen, I don't know if it was the actual bartender that, whatever, the actor that played the bartender who shot this or whoever did it, but like, I thought it was shot perfectly. I mean, but what I mean by that is, obviously, it looked like it was handycam footage, but it was just, the framing was great, the reveals were great, all the reveals were done perfectly, and I thought Triple H's performance in here was absolutely perfect.
He was really good. He's very good in these kind of situations of just playing off of a segment, not being constrained to...
Like,
a promo.
Like all those DX segments, you know?
Exactly. A lot of that was just playing off of each other, and that's what he did here. He was great. Even a little thing I really liked was so many of these times in the segment, you'll get a noise like, where's this camera coming from? And they explained it was the guy who slipped the drink to Stephanie was also filming this.
Yeah, that was
just
great.
A little explanation of who's filming this.
Mm-hmm.
So that was great. They rushed through the I do's and did the big reveal and then drove off.
Well, they didn't do anything. It was just Triple H being a ventriloquist and for Stephanie. And just the idea that this woman who was delivering the ceremony would go along with this. Date rape. Clear date rape. Was very amusing. Highly amusing. Clearly she was somebody who was actually working there, because she seemed to want to go through the whole ceremony, even though Triple H is just...
No, they have credibility to maintain here. This isn't some just, joke.
Yes.
They go back to Stephanie, who is just in tears. Test is distraught, and Hunter says, well, he's now part of the immediate family, therefore cannot be fired for appearing there in this segment, calls Vince dad, and then, of course, the line everyone remembers, it's not if... but how many times they consummated the marriage as we went off the air with the idea that Triple H drugged and raped Stephanie McMahon multiple times before the reveal would come that it was consensual.
Great line. Great line to end a fantastic segment. I thought one of the great WWE moments in history, even though it had nothing to do with actual wrestling, it was just good, corny soap opera to build up to a match, as was sort of, many many of the moments in Attitude Era WWE, but this is certainly one of the more memorable cases. And
this was the peak of Test, really.
Oh yeah, for sure.
And I mean, if there's an argument, it's that, you know, he really didn't benefit anything from this. I mean, he just kind of, after this, he went into a tag team with Albert and forever was just a mid-card guy after this. This was his real peak. His biggest push ever was this wedding.
Yeah, and certainly I felt it probably came way too soon for him. He was definitely way too green, both on the mic and in the ring, for a role like this. The guy was only 24 at the time.
Yeah.
You know, straight out of you know, whatever their developmental was. So, you know, but it was certainly, obviously, you know, we see what it did for Triple H and his career, and, you know, the beginning of his main event run with the company, leading to that Mick Foley feud in January, and in a greater sense, leading him to marrying the boss's daughter in real
life. Which at this time, of course, Triple H was still involved with China, and then, you know, as we talk about, a worked romance turned into a legitimate one.
Mm-hmm.
And thus, the history of wrestling changed from this angle.
All started at a little white chapel.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah.
All right, so there you go. That was Raw from November 29th, 1999. Did you watch that show back at the time in 1999?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
That was Way's viewing period. We'll go to the feedback now quite a bit on this particular episode, and we'll start with Ronaldo from Milan. I had this episode on tape somewhere, and I swear I've watched it hundreds of times. Triple H somehow gets a hold of Stephanie, drugs her, and pretends to say her vows to her. But it's funny. Attitude Era at its best. Campy, idiotic segments that are now classics, there I say. The original idea, from what I've read, had a camera in the chapel look at both from behind just to reveal Triple H instead of Test, and that would have been awesome. What puzzles me is that Test never really got his revenge, which the internet speculated was due to a humbling process before a big push that never actually happened. Nostalgia. What can I say?
It should be noted that, you know, this is on the network, but it's one of the select episodes from that time period that are on the...
Yeah, I don't know why they do this, where it's just random episodes they throw up. It's like scattered, it's not in any order. Like,
yeah.
I don't know why they don't just roll them out in chronological order.
I imagine maybe to just do with time due to, like, I don't know, maybe hardware issues, but...
It could also be that they feel there's fans of certain eras that... They're not interested in 1994 Raws. They watched during the Attitude Era, so give them something. Give them a little bit of something.
Or just, you know, but more importantly, I just think the idea that this is one of the select few episodes that they chose shows that, you know, how important this episode was.
Yeah, it's not like they put on just random shows. It's usually there's something of note on the episode they do post.
We go to Michael from Virginia, who says, I'm sure that the feedback this week will be filled with nostalgic wishes for today's product to be more like it was 99. Like it was in 99, but I actually don't agree. This episode featured a sign behind the hard cam that read, Poontang, a pimp, a porn star, an evening gown match, one of the company's top guys drugging the boss's daughter so that he could marry her and apparently rape her while she slept, and the insufferable tag team of Too Cool. My son, who loves wrestling, couldn't understand why I wouldn't let him watch large portions of this show. I know we still have to sit through Vince's toilet humor now and then, but I'm actually happy that the PG rating constrains creative nowadays. I'm not trying to squash what was an obviously stellar time in wrestling history. I'm just saying there was plenty of stuff from the Attitude Era that I wouldn't want my non-wrestling fans to see. If they see Fandango, they laugh and go, that's dumb. If they see Triple H brag about drugging Stephanie McMahon and raping her multiple times, they go, hey man, let's talk about why you watch this. You might need therapy. That being said, I still enjoyed a lot of the show and did enjoy reliving some of my teenage markdom. I loved The Rock cutting a flawless promo on Al Snow without looking at him or talking to him directly. It was also great to see young Kurt Angle work again. I always loved the juxtaposition that he had as a patriotic dude who had heat with the crowd. JR is always a joy to listen to as well.
We go on over to Chris in Ottawa. I've got $40 and no time. Gentlemen, what an angle this was. Some people say there's one classic moment to take from it, but I say there are two. Of course, there's Triple H's Vegas nuptials with an unconscious Stephanie McMahon riding shotgun, but there's also the flame that lit the fuse. Vince McMahon's unhinged outburst the previous week on Raw as he shouted, play the game, Triple H, while smashing limos and bashing dressing room doors with a baseball bat. Quite frankly, Vince's bat swinging has aged a lot better than Triple H's douchey one-man show. And my God, the fashion. From the Canadian's glammy blonde hair to Triple H's backwards leather beret, wrestling has always been years behind with regards to clothes and hair. How can a company so concerned about trending not at least be trendy? I give this classic Raw with a Vince McMahon in his prime an 8 out of 10.
Corey Ferreira, this is one of my favorite angles of the Attitude Era. At this time, I feel this is when Triple H really starts to get heat worthy of a main eventer, which would continue to develop into the Mick Foley feud in the coming months. The wedding itself isn't all that special other than it's presented very serious until Triple H comes out and shows us the great video of him and Steph going through the drive-thru wedding chapel, with Triple H doing a nice Stephanie McMahon impression. I've always been amused by Tess getting extremely pissed off when Triple H walks off. I had always heard that they use Stephanie McMahon's real-life friends as bridesmaids. Not sure if there's any truth to that or not, but something I had always seen online.
Next up is Chris from Sault Ste. Marie. This show definitely ranks in my top 10 Raws of the Attitude Era. Everything that happened on this show, the crowd seemed into. What was weird for me after watching several episodes of Raw from 1998 was seeing DX essentially get booed, even though they chanted along with the New Age Outlaws. I would also have to assume that this was around the time X-Pac started getting the heat that he would never be able to recover from, as I noticed the hate for him in the six-man tag match was almost palpable. The segment of the night, other than the obvious one, would have to go to The Rock cutting a promo on Al Snow and his attempts on trying to be Foley's tag team partner. Is it me, or did Lillian Garcia's ring announcing sound a little off? Was she just starting out at this point? Yeah, she had only started, I think, in August of that year. Very new to pro wrestling at that point. Also, after the show came to an end, why did Test become largely forgotten about? Wouldn't it have made sense to push Test into a feud with Triple H that would culminate at the Rumble, or maybe even have Vince back out of the match at Armageddon in favor of putting Test there? All in all, it was a great show and managed to keep my attention, unlike most of today's product. I would love to hear your guys' take on the pay-per-view this led up to, Armageddon 1999. I think you just look at it. I think there were people that were not behind Test to headline a pay-per-view, which Vince McMahon, they had more confidence in to headline a show with Triple H. That pay-per-view, it looked god-awful, and from what I recall, was pretty god-awful. Mm. So I'm not in any rush to review that one.
Me neither. Our next piece of feedback from Danny. My thoughts on the wedding was a bizarre worlds colliding craziness with Steph's real-life friends as bridesmaids, and Test having the Hardy Boys and Edge and Christian as his guys. And the great thing is that they play it all so straight with the inspirational soul singers and loving families. And then the priest is like, if anyone has reason to object, and of course all hell breaks loose in the most awesome way. It's all the more awesome because the last major wrestling wedding up to then was Liz and Savage, which was also played totally straight. So there was no expectation from the fans that there would be the craziest twist ever. And what a twist. Because that shot Stephanie did at the party actually put her out cold, allowing Triple H to kidnap her and take her to Vegas. Triple H is really in his glory here.
Maybe it was moonshine she was given.
Ooh.
She's going to be deadly.
Mm-hmm.
Sean from New Jersey writes, this episode of Raw is really only memorable for the great wedding angle at the end of the show. Triple H was so damn funny in the chapel, and his promo afterwards is frequently quoted between friends and I. Other than that big angle, it was a typical Attitude Era show with short matches and loose rules. The one thing that struck me was the fact that they kept hyping their Armageddon pay-per-view in 2 weeks, and on this show, they had already announced 9 out of the 10 matches on the card. That's unheard of nowadays. We are lucky to have 5 confirmed matches before the go-home Raw, 7 irrelevant big show title reigns out of 10. He was really a complete afterthought on this show. Your WWF champion?
Oh, yeah.
Like, just nothing at this point.
Nope. We go to Vince from Vaughn, who says, this was one of the last episodes of Raw I would watch for nearly 10 years.
Whoa.
Ridiculous stuff like this date rape, drug wedding, and other similar deviant criminal behavior would turn me off pro wrestling for a decade. As awful as some of today's product may be, it's nowhere near as unappealing as this 1999 version of sports entertainment. I'm aware that my opinion of the Attitude Era is in the minority, but I can't change how I feel. I hate this stuff, and I'm glad it's been replaced with the PG era.
Well, there's lots of bad shit from the Attitude Era, and I mean the show kind of encapsulated
that.
But
I mean, I look at this like, I mean, shit. It's, I think it's just kind of goofy, you know. Like, what if the storyline took place on The Sopranos? Would that be a turnoff?
Yeah, I think wrestling's weird. It's got like its weird rules of what you accept and what you don't accept, as opposed to a traditional show where it's much more blatant. But I mean, at the time, I just took it as a wrestling angle. It was was what it was. Jeremy in Texas. Maybe it was because of the product. It was so hot at the time, but everyone on the show felt special. Even Barbara Bush, if you know what I mean. I don't know what you mean. All the performers seemed to have a unique quality that got them over with the crowd. It could be nostalgia, but it doesn't seem like that as much nowadays. However, the WWE has been doing a better job of late establishing unique characters like Rusev, Ambrose, Reigns, Cesaro, and Barrett. But there have been some misses like Adam Rose. Maybe I'm in the minority, but I enjoyed the shorter matches. Seemed like it gave them more time to get more guys on the show and made the show flow a bit better. When I watched this live, I absolutely howled, and Triple H called Vince dad and said, not did we, but how many times did we consummate the marriage? Matt Hardy was thin, Kurt Angle had hair, and there were no limits on the overrun. 7 boutonnieres out of 10.
Heisenberg says, I don't remember much of this show, but I was 7 at the time, and I was flicking through the channels, hoping to find an episode of The Simpsons or an old rerun of Saved by the Bell, only to turn on, for the first time, to the Triple H test Stephanie wedding angle. I spent most of my time watching it, trying to figure out what was going on. What the hell is this? Who on earth are these people? Why are they getting married in front of all these people? And why are they in a boxing ring? It took me a few months to realize that this was what pro wrestling is. Triple H's goofy, rapey antics had quite an effect on me, as I was always a big fan of his as a youngster, and I always remember despising Kurt Angle. So I will always remember this episode as it set the ball rolling on my wrestling fandom.
Chris from Wisconsin, this is where I started watching wrestling, and I'm so glad that you're finally reviewing this show. At first, I hated Triple H, but then I came to enjoy him. One part I really enjoyed from this episode was the Farooq, Bradshaw, and Dudley segments. Thank you, and keep up the good work. I give the show 8 boring bachelorette parties out of 10.
All right. Up next, we got Andrew from Peterborough, who says, I love this episode. I remember watching this on TSN as a 17-year-old. It was all the talk the next day at school. Nothing better than being a teenager in the Attitude Era. I just wish Shane O'Mac would come back and take over.
And final one comes from L. Dandy. I'll assume the legitimate one. Was anyone else watching this episode of Raw disturbed by how women were represented on this show? Granted, I was a teenager at the time this Raw took place, and I attended the show live with a group of friends, but watching back, I can see why so many people think Vince Russo hates women. In fairness, Vince Russo wasn't with the company at this point. He had already left. It must have been belittling for Jericho to go from his big debut cutting a promo with The Rock to looking like a crybaby in a feud against China. It seems like it took a long time for Jericho to recover from that program. One thing I really did enjoy that Raw did better back then compared to today was the flow of the show. Yes, we didn't get any classic matches, however, the show moved by quickly, and it seemed like every wrestler on the show was involved in a storyline. The comment from APA and the Dudleys about Public Enemy being dead is quite harsh, reminded me of Joey Styles' rant on Mike Awesome at One Night Stand. In terms of wrestling, this was not a great show, but in terms of entertainment, this was a fun show. Random fact worth mentioning, they used the same song from the Macho Man Elizabeth wedding as they did for the Stephanie McMahon test wedding. And that will wrap up the feedback of a memorable wrestling wedding from the Attitude Era. Way's ecstatic. So, Mr. Ting?
Yes.
Next week.
Yep.
We reset. We review something new.
What are we going to do?
What are we going to do next week? It is the month of July. Mm-hmm. It's a thriving month in wrestling right now. Mm-hmm. Is there a certain genre you feel like? Are you feeling the documentary route? Are you feeling the shitty wrestling route? Are you feeling the great wrestling route? Are you feeling the obscure route?
Man, I wish I had like a six-sided die. I could just like roll to choose for me. Okay, but instead I will... I always like to let chance decide, you know.
Chance?
So, yeah.
Like people chanting?
No.
Oh, chance.
Yeah. So how about I'm thinking of a number in my head.
Do these numbers correspond with something?
They should.
Fuck.
Seems like there's a lot of work just to decide. Okay. Let's do another wrestling show. I feel like we've probably done too many non-wrestling things.
Yeah.
So let's do another wrestling show. Do you want to stick with the WWE or go outside? When was the last time we did the WCW show?
It's been a while.
So maybe we have to...
Well, WCW's July show was Bash at the Beach, which we're not restricted to just doing that particular pay-per-view. I'm just wondering if we've... What Bash at the Beach would be worth... You know what we could do? Oh, do we want to dive into 1999 WCW? I don't know if our systems are ready for that kind of shock to the system.
Oh, man.
Do you want to do good or bad, first of all? I have a few ideas in mind.
I don't think it's up to us to decide good or bad. You know, like we should.
I'm gonna go with a show here.
And if it's actually good, then it's good. I don't think we should.
See, part of me wants to pick because I remember the July TNA pay per view from 2009 featured that horrendous Charmel Jenna Maraska match, but I feel no one's gonna be able to watch that. It's such an obscure show, and I feel TNA shows get the least amount of interest, and I want one that, like this. This is a well-remembered one, and we got lots of requests for this.
Yeah.
So let's look at Bash at the Beach based on votes here. You know what we need? I'm going to put the call out. We very much miss Louis from Montreal. We need someone that wants to maintain the request thread.
Yeah.
We would really appreciate it.
Tally.
We need someone to step up and save this thread and update it, because there's so much.
We need a new GM.
See, the most here is for Bash at the Beach 2000, which we have done.
What's the second one?
Then we have a tie for Bash at the Beach 95, which was outside on a beach. The 1999 show, which featured a junkyard battle royal in an actual junkyard.
Okay.
And then Beach Blast 1992.
It all sounds equally terrible.
We don't have to do any of them, though.
No, but that's fine. Sometimes we got to do terrible.
There is a Nitro from July 31st, 2000, which featured a Viagra on a pole match.
All right, done.
Can we find this? You think we can find this Nitro?
Check the network. Oh,
it won't be up on the network. They won't have Nitro there.
Okay. Well,
you know what? I have faith we can find this one. We've got some.
What is it? What is it? Nitro. What is it? What's the date?
July 31st of 2000. July
31st, 2000. Nitro.
We might have to go hunting for that episode.
Oh yeah, we might.
It's always our backup.
July 31st.
Yeah.
This is riveting TV. It's all here. Wait a second, though.
No.
There's a 95-minute file.
That sounds right. It was a two-hour Nitro at this point, so that sounds right.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, 2 hours. This was after the three-hour period, and they condensed down to two.
Yeah.
So that's it. Let's do it.
We got it.
Is it on YouTube?
It's on YouTube.
Oh, perfect.
For the time being. Yeah.
Until someone hears this. All right, so next week, the July 31st, 2000 edition of Monday Nitro, Viagra on a pole.
Got it.
It's a pole match. That means it was the Russo era. So we will chat about that. And that was just a few weeks after the infamous Bash at the Beach work shoot with Hulk Hogan, Vince Russo.
Oh, my God.
And all that craziness.
The artist taking on Lance Storm. So for those of you who have your Vince Russo complaints for this week,
hold on to them.
Yeah.
And resend them next week.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So that's going to wrap up the show. Very fun chat about our trip to Las Vegas and this edition of Raw.
I'm scrolling through this episode. It looks awful.
That's even better. I can't wait.
Oh, my God.
You can go up to liveaudiowrestling.com to catch all the rest of our shows. We have a new Bauer and Pollock show up, review a Raw from Monday night, The Law featuring the Killer Bees is up from Sunday, and we will be back Thursday night, with Nate chatting about Impact, and then a brand new edition of The Law is coming up Sunday night, 11 Eastern. Listen up at liveaudiowrestling.com. Follow Way at Way0937. I am John Pollock. And what's a good song to end off here with, Way?
I mean, the only song that I think I want to hear more of is that classic Jim Johnston
of course
original. Together under forever. Our love will last forever.
they're all pretty good. It depends on if you want service or if you want style or you want, you know.
What's your personal favorite? Just counting everything.
I like the Bellagio.
Yeah.
I like the Bellagio. May be older, but you get good service there. They take care of you. You know, but, you know, you have a lot of the newer hotels, too, like the Wynn, you know, Cosmopolitan, Aria.
Uh-huh.
Those have nicer...
Modern
technology, you know what I mean?
Yeah. But in terms of class...
Yeah, in terms of class, too. You know, they got more...
When are the fountain shows?
The what?
When's the fountain show at the Bellagio?
I think they start at 12. I think they have it once every hour after that.
Okay. Yeah, my friend doesn't believe me. My friend, like, I walked us, a bunch of us, to the Bellagio, and he thought it was really lame.
What?
He thought the fountain was really lame.
Oh, is that right?
But, I mean, obviously, without the show, it's just a big pond. But with the show, I'm sure...
No, the water show is fantastic.
It's world famous.
I still like looking at it. And I've seen it 100 times.
Yeah.
And I still like to stop it and look at it. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's world famous, isn't it?
You know? The pond ain't nothing. You're just looking at water. You know what I mean?
It's true.
But once the show starts, then it truly, you know, especially the water goes with the music. You know?
Yeah. Water and music.
When I first heard about it, the water dances with the music, I just, how does that kind of work?
How does it work?
Once I saw it, I think, oh my God, it's pretty. Las Vegas.
Yes. Hey, sir, how far is downtown from where we're going?
You know what? It's about maybe a mile and a half, maybe a little bit further. Because it's on the boulevard, I mean, you still keep going.
Is it walkable or is it a cab?
You can walk it. Okay, you can pass right by y'all.
About how long of a walk you think?
Yeah, you know, with this heat, it may be different.
Oh, okay.
A mile isn't that much.
Okay. And we just keep walking down this road?
Just keep walking straight down Las Vegas Boulevard.
Gotcha.
And you're going to hit Fremont. Have you ever been there?
No, I wanted to see it for so long, but yeah, it's been out of the way.
It's pretty. Fremont Street's pretty nice. I like it.
Even at this time?
Huh? Even no, at the this best time to go is in the evening.
Yeah.
Because right now everything's kind of dormant right now.
Right.
Because, you know, after about 12, everything gets going.
Okay. You know? 12, midnight?
No.
12 p.m.
Anytime in the evening when it starts getting dark, you know, 5, 6, 7 o'clock.
Okay.
It's a good time
to
go. But, like what I'm saying is they got a bunch of booths over there. You know, vendors, you know?
Yeah.
And they don't start opening the vendors until about 12 o'clock.
Okay.
You know?
12 mid? 12 midnight?
They got a zip line.
12 p.m.?
They have the biggest light show in the world there. You won't see it.
Yeah. Damn, okay. Maybe I'll have to see it another time.
The light show's amazing.
I want to see it.
The light show will blow your mind.
I want to see it.
But they show that once every hour. Once it gets dark, they show that.
Like a light show with all the different casinos?
Yeah. Where the casinos are on both sides of the street. The light show.
You mean the thing with the big roof? Roof with the lights? That's what I was saying. You remember Mace? The rapper Mace? You remember the Puff Daddy and then Mace?
Yeah.
He had this rapper named Mace. Oh. Like, it was sort of his protege. And then he did a music video here.
Oh, okay.
And I just, like, I always remembered that video as a...
Yeah, scene. They changed the light show every so often. They put different stuff on there. You change it. It's all computerized.
Okay,
but,
cool.
But it's pretty cool. It's pretty neat.
Maybe I'll check that out tonight. Tonight's our last night here, so...
Yeah, because I say the best time is in the evening. You get to see the light show.
Yeah.
There's bands playing in different locations in the street. The food is cheaper. The food is cheaper. The gambling's better over there.
The gambling's better?
Yeah.
How so?
It's cheaper to get on a table.
Oh, okay. Yeah, lower.
The machines are looser.
What does that mean?
In other words, you don't have to put $100 in there to win.
Oh,
something.
Okay.
You know, you can put $50 in there.
I thought you meant like...
You might get lucky
and
win.
Oh, yeah,
in other words,
like
your odds of winning are better over there on a machine than over here.
Yeah.
The machines are tighter. In other words, they'll give you less. You know?
That's right.
Over there, you can get prime rib for $9.
Whoa.
Steak and lobster for $15. Your beers, $2.50.
Oh, wow.
You get margaritas 99 cents all day long.
Yeah, yeah. That's awesome. Sounds way better than the MGM where we're staying. Where it's like...
Plus, they got their buffets. You know, each casino has their buffets. They have their restaurants. They got four-star restaurants over there.
Oh, wow.
Their buffets. They got a food court over there if you just want a pizza or a burger or something, you know.
Oh, sounds like I should have spent time there instead of where we're at. Sounds like where our area is, it's just a major tourist trap.
Yeah, well, it is. You know, what do they call it?
Ripoff.
But it's
high end.
Yeah, high end. They call it corporate, is what they call it. Because they have all the conventions here in Vegas. So
it's just a nice way. That's just a way of making it sound elitist. Wow, these are all of the. This is this whole area, sort of like the chapel.
Yeah, they got chapels all over. If you go downtown, they got a bunch over there too.
Wow.
They got them all over, but you know they have them on this street right here.